But brethren, we left off in Revelation, the 8th chapter. We had we were discussing verse 5, and I think that there was good expressions on it, indeed. But I wanted to touch more on it. I'm going to give kind of a summary comment, and then we'll be happy to entertain other comments on that. So in Revelation 8 and verse 5, and the angel took the censer and filled it with fire off of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices, thunderings, and lightnings, and an earthquake. So we noticed last week that there was a change in action by this angel. The previous verses, the angel was offering up incense with the prayers of the saints. And the discussion was demonstrating that we thought this was based on the merit of our Lord's sacrifice. He then offers up his church as his body member sacrifice, along with their sacrifice are their prayers throughout the gospel age. And their our prayers are concerning the increase in errors and the persecution, as it were, of truth and the persecution of the truth people or the spirit begotten by the nominal church primarily. Started with Jewish persecution, went to pagan Roman persecution, and then it went to nominal Christian persecution. So their prayers are ascending. And the angel is Jesus, the head of the body, as we saw in the first chapter of Revelation, as our priest tending to the church throughout the gospel age. So the trumpets are a response to these prayers. It's almost as if the prayers and the incense are the backstory as to why the Heavenly Father provided the seven trumpeters. And then we discussed that the seven trumpeters were the same as the seven messengers to the church. And that with that, the difference is the message to the church were for the spirit begotten, whereas the trumpet is the message of truth that is blasted or trumpeted out into the air and has its effects, as it were, over those that would hear this trumpet. It was considered to be distressing when it's as a trumpet to those who hear it. To the true church, it's a message of encouragement, like to the churches. To those who are opposed to the truth, it is a trumpet blast. It is frightening and disturbing. So then that backstory got us to our chapter 8, verse 5. This angel, still Jesus, took a censer and filled it with fire of the altar and cast it to the earth. So there's a change of action. The angel who had been offering incense in the holy is now out in the court and taking fire from the brazen altar in the court, so to speak. This is something that's, like I say, it's a change of action. And this fire is then cast to the earth, and it results in these four symbols, voices, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. So we had mentioned last week that we thought that this would be a cumulative throughout the gospel age, as it were. But I think it was Ruth and perhaps Brother Chris in their comments were emphasizing they thought this was an end of the gospel age depiction. And I think that carries weight with me because the expressions, voices, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake, we did a sub-study on this. You may remember on the notes of Revelation, the fourth chapter. If you printed it out the way I have it in 14-point type, it would be pages 10 and 11. But nonetheless, in Revelation, the fourth chapter, we had the three symbols before the throne, voices, thunderings, and lightnings. And we did a sub-study, and we read this very verse, and we also read the two that came out last week, so that we had the sub-study looking at every place where voices, thunderings, and lightnings occurred. And what we found was that in chapter 4, in the throne room, there was no earthquake mentioned. But here, we have the three followed with an earthquake. And then in Revelation 11, the seventh trumpet sounds in verse 15, 11:15, seventh trumpet. But at the end of the chapter, chapter 11, verse 19, the temple of God was open in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the Ark of the Covenant, and there were lightnings, voices, thunderings, and an earthquake, and great hail. So we discussed that the seventh trumpet was sounded by Brother Russell. This is a transition to the heavenly kingdom, as it were. But the point is that when the Ark of the Covenant, which represents the church, is in the temple, it's glorified. That's where you see these symbols coming forth. Then in Revelation 16th chapter, where we have our seven last plagues. Revelation 16. We see that in verse 17, that the seventh messenger or angel poured his bowl out on the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple saying, "It is done." And there were voices, thunders, lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such was not since men were on the earth and so great. So the point here that was brought out in our sub-study and brought out again last week is that when it is finished and the seventh plague is poured out, it shows that the church is complete. The final feet members of the church have finished their work. They've gone to their reward. The result is the thunders, lightnings, the greatest earthquake that ever was, the voice of thunder and lightnings. So this is the great Armageddon crash, the final destruction of the nominal systems. And in fact, in verse 21, a great hail is mentioned. And that hail reminds us of what we just read in chapter 11, verse 19. Voices, thunderings, lightnings, earthquake, and great hail. So the suggestion was that this, back in our chapter 8, when this angel takes his censer and fills it with fire from off the altar, the brazen altar, casts it to the earth, and the end result, this would show the conclusion of what the seven trumpets would accomplish when they are poured out like seven last plagues. So the trumpet messages, each messenger gives his trumpet blast in his time throughout the gospel age. But in the end, the final feet members of the church take those same truths, condensed, and the Lord sets the stage that they pour them out on the world. And in the end, poured out on the air, is the final act of the church. It is done. And then the order, the world order falls apart, starting with Christendom. And we have our voices of controversy, our great lightnings of enlightening, flashing, startling truth, the thunderings of judgment. Truths, the great earthquake of social revolution, showing that status quo is no longer acceptable, and that the hail the hard truths beat down all the errors and men's pride as well in this greatest earthquake that ever was since there was a nation, showing, we think, that our chapter 8, verse 5 would be the culmination of the seven trumpets when the church is complete. So that's what I wanted to mention and bring out. There was one other cooperative scripture we thought fit. I'm sure there's others, but I just thought of the one was back in Ezekiel 9. We're all very familiar with the man with the writer's inkhorn. And he put a mark on men's foreheads that they'd be saved from the six destroyers that followed. And we talked about that. Brother Russell's writings was the man with the inkhorn. And there were six man-made false teachings that were destroying men's faith in the ransom for all. And we've talked about those, everything from evolution to higher criticism and such. But there at the end of Ezekiel 9, the man with the writer's inkhorn says, I have done what you have sent me to do. Chapter 10, Ezekiel chapter 10, the opening couple of verses, that same man is called to take coals of fire from between the cherubim and throw them on the earth, throw them on the city to burn it up. I'll just give you the reference. Going to be Ezekiel 10 and almost there. Verse 2 and 3. Ezekiel 10, 2 and 3. And so we think that is a similar depiction of how the Lord Jesus will use the truth of his seven angel messengers in a consolidated, condensed form, and will set the stage so that truth goes out and has this impact of resulting in bringing down the systems, because they're exposed for what they were, and it's God's final judgment. So we'll leave that at that. Any comments on any of that so far? Sister Debbie.
I had a couple questions. Now I got to go back to... the fire... from the altar, casting it to the earth. I think you said so, but I'm not sure. Is that before or after the plagues? That's after the last plagues that this fire is cast down and it causes this problem. And my second question, let me just throw it out there.
The coals of fire are the seven last plagues.
Well, that's this in Revelation 8:5.
Yes.
The fire of the altar.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the seven last plague. Okay, I got that. Now, just to bring, because I'm thinking of when the church and state comes together, supposed to come together, because the state's really can't fall unless it's attached to Babylon in some sense. You know, that's the way I picture it. You know, that they're attached. That happens before the voices, thunders, lightnings, and earthquake. Ruth was studied that, but I can't remember what you call it.
In Revelation 16, we read the seventh plague being poured out. In the sixth plague, it tells us that the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet are united in the words that come out of their mouth. And it leaves the world to Armageddon, brings them to the cuspis of Armageddon. And It's demonstrating by the time the plagues are to be poured out, the church and state system has cooperated to some extent. Okay. Because they enforce the marking of the beast and the false prophet. They enforce it. So it's that final, when they're empowered together, once again, that final testing of receiving the mark or not is going to probably be the equivalent of what divides Elisha and Elijah, what will separate the little flock from the great company, which will then grant the little flock the ability, probably put on trial, to give a final witness in their martyrdom. Now, this isn't our study, but I do want to say, you remember the first martyr, Stephen, and you remember reading, in, I think it's Acts 7, his testimony, and it caused them to kill him. But he got that testimony out. Remember Jesus, he was before Pilate. You and I are reading what he said. We weren't there, but the message got out. He gave a final witness, John the Baptist. He was testifying against an illicit union. Got him put in jail and beheaded, but he got his message out. The three Hebrews wouldn't bow down to the image. They were cast in a fiery furnace, but the Lord burned their bonds and didn't hurt them. They got their message out. They had more liberty, even though it depicts through persecution. So the various scriptural pictures demonstrate that even though you and I can't imagine how it would actually be, we're so insignificant, God loves to use the insignificant to magnify himself. But he loves to use the truth as the weapon whereby he exposes the errors of the adversary. So in all of that, brethren, like I said, we can't turn that's not today's study, and no one's saying it is, but it's kind of how we have to leave it till we get more into that, or it just refreshes your memory on studies we've had together on that. Now I'm going to call on Brother Chris on that. Is your comment on that along that line, Brother Chris? Or is there something different?
Along that line.
Okay.
I just wanted to bring out that you had sent out, it's just a snapshot that what we expect to happen in the future with this church-state union. You had sent out that little blurb, and you can fill in the facts if you wish, but it basically in India, a government had the Hindus feel so threatened of their religion by conversion into other religions. Maybe it was Sister Debbie who sent that out, but they were passing laws they put it in the guise of forced conversion. And that it was illegal, and that imprisonment was actually threatened for that. And they were having a hard time getting everybody to get on board for that, but it was obvious that they felt threatened. And so when you start getting plaguing messages coming out that people are actually believing and receiving, you can see where they would do drastic measures to keep the status quo. Anyway, over.
Very true. Very true. Very good. Thank you. Sister Debbie, are we caught up? Good. Thank you. Other comments so far? Okay, so if we go back to Revelation, the 8th chapter, and we pick up on verse 6, the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. I have to say that I didn't have anything special to say on that. It seems pretty straightforward. We're going now back to the beginning of the gospel age, and we'll start that in verse 7, but did anyone have anything on verse 6? Sister Debbie?
Not to be stupid or anything, but, you know, when you think about the word prepare, how do you prepare yourself to blow a trumpet? You know, you have to, well, I always see people, you know, doing these lip exercises. So it's like, it's almost like practicing maybe wording or, you know, how people practice their speech before they give it. So maybe, you know, if you look at it a little bit like that, you know, you get in some practice before you, you know, you sound. They write on it and everything. So it's just kind of an idea of that preparation over learning. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. Ruth?
Well, I was just thinking in Revelation, it gives you little clues. And this is a clue that, like, we were looking at the angel and we were looking at the brazen altar and the censer and that. And it's almost like in a dream or in a movie, now there's a new scene. So it seems like that's what this is saying. Now we're looking at the angels. Now we're done with that. Now we're looking at the angels. Over.
Yes, very good. So it is a transition expression to expect to move back to the beginning of the gospel age. And now what these trumpeters actually accomplished, who they affected with their trumpet message. We got the backstory on why the Lord has these trumpeters. We found out what the conclusion is going to be at the end of the gospel age of these trumpet messages. But now we're going to go back. And if I was to say an angel prepared himself, it was through deep consecration of their lives in devotion to God, willing to sacrifice every aspect of themselves in the master's service. And indeed, that is what they did when we think of who these messengers were. They were fearless in sounding forth their message of truth. And each one of them suffered in their own way. Some unto death, of course. So, but that's okay. Verse 6. Anything else on 6? Brother Chris.
Well, you just filled in the finer details, but just the word prepared suggests a time factor. And so we know in God's time, the religious, the political, and the social arrangement had to be just so for the timing of that particular trumpet. And as you brought out, the person that would actually trumpet it. Over.
Okay, thank you. Good. Any other comments on 6? So let's see. Brother David Vickery. Could you just go ahead and read for us that verse 7? We have our first trumpet as a single verse.
Verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast down upon the earth, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up.
Okay.
Over.
All right. Thank you. Sister Cheryl, I know you have Rotherham's usually pretty readily available. There's just at least one little addition in Rotherham's I thought was good. Please.
It says, and the first sounded, and there came to be hail and fire mingled with blood, and it was cast into the earth. And a third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees was burned up. And all green herbage was burned up.
All right. I'll just ask, did you pick out a difference there between Rotherham's and the King James, Sister Cheryl?
Not right offhand.
Okay. A third of the earth burned up in Rotherham's. It doesn't mention that in the King James, so I just wanted to emphasize that.
Okay.
I thought Rotherham's was good. And the sounding, we have the thought it's trumpeting. So we have to do a little comparison here before we get into the real nitty-gritty. There's some things we're going to want to establish in considering these trumpet messages. We'll take a couple of, you know, it's going to take us a few moments to do that together, but then it'll serve us well. One is that the expressions about the one-thirds or the thirds, that expression appears in all of the trumpets except it doesn't appear in the fifth trumpet, it doesn't appear in the seventh trumpet, but it appears in the other five, this thirds. So we want to consider that for a moment. Does anyone have a scripture that demonstrates what our thirds Well, let's put one out here. Let's see. Sister Roseanne, could you read Zechariah? Let's see. It's Zechariah, and it is. Let me get it right. 13 verses 8 and 9. Zechariah 13, 8 and 9, please. Just so you unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. Zechariah 13, 8 and 9. And it shall come to pass in all the land, says the Lord, that two-thirds in it shall be cut off and die, but one-third shall be left in it. I will bring the one-third through the fire, will refine them as silver in as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. They will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, this is my people, and each one will I say, the Lord is my God.
All right, thank you. And I appreciate yours says one third for all of it, where the King James says two parts and then one third. So that was helpful. Thank you. Do you have an opening comment on that, Sister Roseanne?
No, Brother Rick.
All right. Does anyone? Ruth?
I have some notes. I don't have a source, though, but that the two-thirds that are cut off and die are the great company and the church during the trouble, that they don't survive the trouble. But Israel is refined, and the holy remnant of Israel is prepared. Their characters are prepared to receive the kingdom through the tribulation.
Okay, very good. And in my own mind, there's a little distinction there, but that's good. I mean, you really hit the highlight. Sister Cheryl, I saw your hand moving.
Well, I had the notes that the two parts for the little flock in great company from reprint 3776 and reprint 3634, and the third that would be left would be the world of mankind. Over.
Okay, good. That's what I'm more familiar with, and if you look in the expanded comments, brethren, you'll be able to pick out those reprint citations as well. All right, good. Brother Dan.
The same thought, Brother Rick, except for it combines Sister Cheryl's and Sister Ruth's comment with the third part. And I didn't write down where that reference is from, but it's from the Harvest Message. The third part represents the world of mankind, starting with the holy remnant of Israel, who go through the trouble when Gog attacks. So, including both. Over.
All right, good. That's a nice harmonization of the two. And we know that's how, we know from other scriptures, that's how it will work out. So that's very good. Appreciate that. Sister Debbie.
Just a quick, interesting note that in the Youngs, it says, verse 7 says, sword awake against my shepherd, which is a church, and against a hero, my fellow. So in a sense, a great company in the end becomes like a hero. Over.
Okay, thank you. So, brother, we're going to leave Zechariah, but I think we proved our point, and that is, Ruth?
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'll be after you.
If you want to talk on Zechariah, I'm going to leave it.
Well, the point being that it's not numerical thirds. It's not equal thirds. It's just three sections of humanity, the first two being the spiritual classes that are taken, and last being the rest of the world, or beginning with Israel. But so that was the point, that you can have three parts, but they're not particularly equal thirds.
Okay, very good. That's and Brother Russell makes that observation in one of those reprints. And that is the point that we want to keep in mind, that we're just looking for three divisions or three groupings in our trumpets as we move along. And it's not going to be the same three, nor are they going to be equal numerically in size or number. Just a clue. There's three divisions. Okay, very good. Now, there's another example of a third that will appear in our that appears and is useful in our first trumpet. But let me just ask, does anyone have a verse or an example of three parts that would be coincide with this first trumpet? Ruth.
Well, I'm trying to find, oh, it's John 19, 19 and 20. And Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. This title then read many of the Jews, for the place where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the city, and it was written in Hebrew and Greek and Latin, that they represent the three languages of the world at that point. So there were three parts to the world, and they wanted all three parts to know that this was Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews.
Okay, very good. So with that, and particularly with our first trumpet, that's the same period as our first seal, or the same period as the first church. So who is our messenger to the first church? I think we all know it's Paul. I mean, we all agree to that. And now, with that being said, how would we interpret these three languages on the cross as representing three possible divisions or groups in the world, in the part of the world we're interested in, of course? What would they be, what three groupings might they represent, those languages? Burnett.
Well, I might be way off, but I was just thinking of Christians, the Jews, and the heathen, or the remainder of the world of mankind.
Over. Okay, very good. Anyone else on that? So the suggestion is that, of course, the Latin would become the Roman language. That would represent pagan Rome as a grouping. And, of course, the Hebrew would represent Judaism and the Jewish people as a grouping. And Greek became the language of emerging Christianity. Of course, it started with the Aramaic or Hebrew, if you will, because it hadn't spread out to the Gentiles. But as it spread out to the Gentiles, Greek became the language of the emerging church. And Paul, of course, was a master at these languages himself. But the thought is that that's our three divisions: pagan Rome, pagan beliefs, Israel with Judaism, and emerging Christianity. Okay. Any comments on that? All right. So then, when we look at our chapter 8, verse 7, the Apostle Paul sounds, and what was Paul's time period as a messenger? What do we say? Sister Chappelle.
I have 33 to 93.
Okay. That's good. Okay. That's certainly good. All right. And then we have John as our second messenger. Did anyone have something much different? All right. So when we have our events of that stage of the church, and we're using the events of that time period to help us interpret this, Paul's message trumpets out, and there was hail. And as a result of this message, and what we, I think we all agree, hail is frozen water, so it's hard truths. It's truths that are destroying something. And hail usually destroys, from God's point of view, hard water destroys errors, some type of error. It could be error of pride, or it could be error of doctrine. But it usually is destroying Satan or man-made doctrines. But it could be destroying pride as well. Anything more on hail? We can come back and put this all together in comments. But the next symbol is fire mingled with blood. So we have fire, and fire is a, here would be a sense of judgments, fiery judgments. But it fire spreads. It has an interesting aspect that we all are reading about, the forest fires that happened in Colorado. Terrible, terrible. 1,000 homes burned just because of the wind, you know, fanning the flames. So fire has a thought of spreading judgment, spreading destruction as a result of truths, because this is in association with the trumpet blast, and the trumpet is truth. Okay. Mingle with blood shows that there's life being taken. There's life being poured out. Sometimes, if it's the blood of Jesus, it's good in that sense. But if it's just blood, in a more generalized sense, being poured out, it's showing that life is being taken or life is ceasing. So we'll come back and we'll all put this together, but let's take it in part by part. And it says that these were cast upon one third of, on the earth, sorry. This is, of course, some society under religious restraint of some sort. And the third part of the earth was burned up. Third part of the trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. And so we see that this message, this trumpet message of truth, and these hard truths, this spreading, consuming truth of fiery that's taking life, the blood poured out, it's affecting one of these three parts that we determined. And then it's affecting a third part of the tree. So let's hold on for a second. Let's ask ourselves, what do trees represent as a symbol? Burden.
From our Ezekiel study, we have upright men represented by the palm trees. Over.
Okay, so we have upright men, and that's Psalm 92:7 with the palm trees. But even in Psalm 1, what's another example or such? Or it doesn't matter. If you have another comment, that's fine. Brother Chris.
Trees can represent groups of people and or nations. So I think we see that in context in various verses.
Okay. Ruth?
Well, just combining the two comments, I was thinking of those that are considered to be justified.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk on that a little bit more. You'll remember that we had that funny parable about the trees in the forest. I can't remember it right, but remember they put the bramble tree ahead of them, and it was so bad because why not a cedar of Lebanon or the oaks of Bashan? Why would you put the bramble? And the point was that the trees show leaders, and mankind often puts the worst men in leadership positions. They're like brambles, and they set aside the better men that are like the oaks or like the cedars. And they choose poorly. So trees represent in some fashion leaders. They're men, but they're tall, and it's in comparison to the grass, because the grass All flesh is like grass. We know that from the Old Testament example. So the people are like grass, and the trees are above them, showing that they're in a leadership role. So this is suggesting that a third of the earth, one of the portions of religiously restrained society, and their leaders, and all green grass, though, is burned up. And it's not just grass. It's specifically what grass was considered to be green was burned up. So these were all consumed. So so we're going to hold on to that for a moment, what we developed here so far, without drawing out the punchline. We're just going to hold that there. You will remember that when we went through the seven seals, it was our fifth seal that really gave us the insight when it was the souls of those under the altar crying out to God, "How long, O Lord?" And you and I got the insight from the fifth seal to understand the context of seals. Brethren, in a similar pattern, and we're always looking for patterns in Revelation, in a similar pattern, it's our fifth trumpet that gives us the means of trying to interpret correctly. So, particularly with our first trumpet about this green grass burned up, we want to look at the fifth trumpet and read there. I think it's going to be helpful for us. So, our fifth trumpet is found. It's chapter 9. The fifth trumpet is sounding in verse 1, but let me ask Sister Connie, could you read for us chapter 9 and verses 1 through 5, please? 1 through 5.
And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven fallen unto the earth, and there was given to him the key of the well shaft of the abyss. And he opened the shaft of the abyss, and there went up a smoke out of the shaft, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the shaft. And out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth, and authority was given them, as the scorpions of the earth have authority. And it was said unto them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only such men as have not the seal of God on their foreheads. And it was given them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tried 5 months, and their trial is as the trial of a scorpion when it striketh a man.
Oh, and one more, please.
And in those days men shall seek death, and shall in no wise find it. And they shall desire to die, and death fleeth from them.
All right. Thank you. Sister Connie, any opening comments on this?
No.
All right. To Mike Silton, Brother Dan, do you have an opening comments on this at all?
Not so much. I'm my mind's wandering, but the fifth angel was Wycliffe. And we know that his message was very, for lack of a better word, destructive to the false teachings of nominal Christianity. So we'll just leave it there.
All right, very good. So would anyone else like to just get us a summary here of this fifth trumpet? Ruth.
Oh, I raised my hand before that. I don't know how well I'll do on a summary, but I was just thinking.
Oh, hold on. Hold on. Let me give the summary, and then you'll give your comment. Just hold on a second. As brought out, the fifth trumpeter is our messenger, Johann Wycliffe. He wrote the Bible into English. He opened the bottomless pit of the Bible by putting it in the common language of the people, and the nominal church leaders were mortified. They were trying to keep the Bible out of the hands of the common person. But with opening the Bible, Wycliffe also understood truths about no transubstantiation, no popism and such. And this was like letting out all this smoke and all of this, these locusts that were like scorpions. This was a terrible, the truths he revealed were a terrible plague on the nominal church. Only those who believed it, believed the truths, were not tormented. So this is the background. Those who believed the truths he was bringing forth from the Bible were not tormented. And the nominal church people, they were tormented by these truths. So Ruth, you get to your punchline.
Well, I was just noticing that the earth, the grass, in verse 4, and the trees are not hurt compared to the first trumpet where some of the trees and all the grass is hurt. So it's just opposite.
Very good. And that's our point. Now, I want to make a correction from the Sinaitic and the Alexandrian manuscript on verse 4. Sister Cheryl, you're nodding your head. You got it there? Please?
Neither any green thing. Mysterious.
Perfect. All right. But what we're so helped here is that it tells us the men who were tormented were those who did not have God's approval or seal in their foreheads. So that means the green trees and the grass of the earth, which is green here, they are those which do have the seal of God in their foreheads. They are intellectually, that is, they believe the truth that Wycliffe was bringing forth. They're not tormented and they're not consumed. But the interesting thing here, brethren, is to build on that, is to demonstrate that these men who were tormented by the truth, they sought to die. They sought death, but they were denied it. And they were tormented for 5 months. And you remember when we studied this, that was 5 months of 30 days each. That was 150 days. A day for a year gave us the 150 year period from Wycliffe's message to the great Reformation work. That Martin Luther began, 1517. So they sought death, but they were denied it. Death represents conversion. You die to your old beliefs, and you're accepting the new beliefs. It's showing being converted to the truth. As far as a nominal church viewed people who accepted the truth, they were considered dead as far as they were concerned. They were heretics. And heretics didn't have any life with God from the nominal perspective. So actually dying was a good thing because it means you were dead to the old errors you believed. You were accepting the new truths coming forth. You were converted to the truth. And yet, from the nominal churches, they look like you died because you became a heretic. In our sixth trumpet, we're in chapter 9, verse 14, verse 13, sorry, 9:13, the sixth angel trumpeted. Now, drop down to verse verse 15, for example. Verse 15. 9:15. The four angels were loosed, and there was prepared an hour, a day, a month, a year for to slay the third part of men. And it continues, verse 18. By these three was a third part of men killed. And it goes on. So instead of being tormented, like during Wycliffe's pre-Reformation period, by truth, this group, this third group, were slain. That means they did convert to the truth. And they did accept it. And so from the nominal perspective, they died as heretics. But from the Lord's perspective, they were the ones who were being faithful to the truth. So why were people tormented in the fifth trumpet? Why were they tormented and not, they sought death, but they couldn't get it until the Great Reformation? Well, it demonstrates, Brother Chris, go ahead. You need to unmute, sorry.
Sorry, I thought you were asking the question, but...
That's good.
I think it goes back to that verse 2:9-2, that this Wycliffe's message was like smoke coming out of a great furnace, and the result was the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit, and so... the sun would be the gospel message, and the air was the life that you would breathe in that would provide life. And it really, the knee-jerk reaction of the church was the Dark Ages, really. That's the way I perceive that. Over.
All right. Thank you. So it really took the setting of the Great Reformation. It took the advent of the printing press. It took the advent of these pre-Reformation reformers doing their work throughout England and Scotland and Europe to set the stage so that when Martin Luther took on the Pope and wouldn't back down, and the German princes supported Luther and wouldn't give in to the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, that then that emboldened the rest of Europe to follow their conscience, as it were, and we had then the Great Reformation. So that it was much more easier for people to become Protestants protesting the church. Even the Church of England broke away. So that there was this men could die. They could die to their old belief, and then they showing their conversion to accepting truth going forth. But to the nominal church system, they looked like they were heretics. So we're just saying all that, brethren. This fifth trumpet will help us to understand better how to interpret the other symbolic trumpets. Sister Molly.
Before we leave these verses, I'm not understanding. I understand that these ones were seeking conversion or death, and they're tormented because they weren't able to be converted, and it was told that these ones didn't have the power to convert in verse 5, kill them, but only to torture them for 5 months. Confused why those denied it. If they are actually seeking it, honestly, is that what we're saying? That they've been denied conversion? Or that they were almost denied? I'm just misunderstanding something. Over.
Oh, that's a logical question. That's good. Thank you. Brother Chris.
It was, in my mind, it's because the Inquisition was at its zenith during those years. Anyone who tried to convert, the nominal church had the power to persecute and execute through the civil authorities during that time, from Wycliffe, basically, right up to Luther and beyond. So I think that goes a long way to explaining why they couldn't convert, even if they wanted to. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Bodan.
And also, as brought out, the even though Wycliffe was able to write the Bible in the common language, the ability to print it out, to make it available like it was more available during the Reformation period, it wasn't there, so it couldn't reach the common people as well as it could years later during the sixth trumpet, during that message going out. Over.
Okay, very good. Fits in well, too. Thank you. Ruth.
Seems to me like it's connected with verse 5, that they're seeking relief from the torment. And the torment was that their doctrines that they believed were constantly being undermined and tried and tested by these doctrines of Wycliffe. So they would have loved to have gotten relief from that by being able to accept the Wycliffe doctrines, but they were bound hand and foot to the church. So they weren't getting the relief that they could have had. It was available to them. All they had to do was convert and accept Wycliffe's doctrines, but they couldn't do that because they just were bound hand and foot to the papacy.
Very good. That's all good expressions. There's an expression that says an idea whose time has not yet come. Conversely, you could say an idea whose time has come. So the truth idea during the fifth stage of the church or fifth trumpet, its time has not come to be greatly appreciated and adopted. But by the sixth stage of the church, 150 years later, after the truth had been going out during that fifth trumpet, finally, after a century and a half, when the Great Reformation began, then the idea of the truth time had come. And a third part accepted it. They were killed. They converted. So I think all the expressions have been certainly helpful for me on this, thus demonstrating. And I think each of us probably can think of somebody who we've told the truth to, even the basic truths. And they've said, well, I hope you're right. And then they turn around and go to church on Sunday where they're preaching hellfire or go partake of the mass, but they said, I hope you're right. And it's like they want to dismiss it from their mind. They don't want it to torment them. They just want to say, well, it sounds good. I don't know how to argue against it, but I'm going to go to my church that doesn't believe that. It's like they weren't converted. But when they think about it, it's almost like a torment if they were willing to think about it, but they just dismiss it and say, oh, I'll just leave it up to God. Kind of a thing. So in all of this, though, let me double back. Sister Molly, was there any help with what was said?
Yes, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate the comments. I'm going to think on it a little more. I think I was kind of thinking, like, if people are converted in a sense, I suppose that's known of the Lord regardless. I think maybe, I don't know if I'm overthinking or what, but I do appreciate the comments. It helps. Thank you.
Well, that's true. Those who would agree to it would become part of the people who were bearing, like, the scorpion. They'd become part of those who would be bearing these truth doctrines. In Wycliffe's day, they were the Lollards. They were the poor men who would go out and they would take scripture to the common people. So if you did accept these truths, you'd be part of this plague. But the majority of men were not willing to accept the truths, but they were tormented. They were found themselves in a difficult strait to try to explain the errors they had when the Bible was being distributed in their own language in England. How do you harmonize the two? You know, where in the Bible does it say we're supposed to have a pope? You know, and things like that. But, Ruth?
Well, there was another point that was interesting to me, that they got away with it. These Lollards, these ones that were preaching the truths of Wycliffe, got away with it because papacy was in disarray, because they had it was a period of time where they had the two popes, and at one point three popes, and they were all claiming to be the pope, and so they were so distracted by all this disarray in papacy at the time that they didn't have the power to cut down these locusts. So these locusts were able to torment the with the truth. They had all this liberty to preach the truth, and so nothing happened to put them out of their misery. In other words, over.
Okay, very good. So, brethren, we're going to leave it here. We're going to come to this fifth trumpet before long, and we'll go back over. But let's see the flow. And I'm looking at the clock. I'd like to try to summarize this first one and get some comments on it, this first trumpet. So we're going to go back to our verse 7. And I'm going to word it this way. The apostle Paul trumpeted forth his truth message in Judaism and among the Gentiles, which were part of and living in the pagan Roman Empire. Pagan Rome dominated Israel. It dominated the lands that Paul visited. And his message was hard truth. And it had a consuming judgment that exposed error, and it took life, mingled with blood. It took life. And it was cast out on the earth, and a third part of the earth. In other words, his message went out over Judaism, emerging Christianity, and pagan Rome. That's where his message went. And to Judaism, it was the death of Judaism. It was the Lord's time for that third part. Judaism would have had its day. Think about it. Jesus himself cast off the house of Israel the week that he died. I leave unto you your house, the Jewish house, desolate. We remember that when Jesus died, the temple to the most, in the temple, the curtain to the most holy was ripped from top to bottom, showing God's rejection of the typical sacrifices, because Jesus had provided the antitype. He provided the ransom price. God's no longer interested in those typical animal sacrifices. That in Daniel 9, the prophecy of the 70 weeks of years, 490 years, was fulfilled in 36 AD, and now the Jewish special covenant was over. And the truth went out to the Gentiles. And, well, let me leave that. And then in 70 AD, the temple was destroyed, so that certainly the Jews could no longer offer their typical sacrifices. And when you look on the divine plan of the age chart, we got plain P. Remember plain P? Typical justification for the nation of Israel because of the animal sacrifices. But it ended about 70 AD. So the Jewish typical justification was no longer accepted of God. They were the green grass that was burned up. Particularly, all people are like grass. But the green grass that was consumed was Judaism. Their typical justification ended. And that blood was taken. That life poured out. They no longer had a standing with God in that same way. And their third part of their trees, the Jewish leaders had no answer for the message of Christianity. And so we see Judaism then on the demise, and, you know, by 130 AD, the diaspora took place, and the Jews were scattered over the earth, and they weren't even allowed to live in their land after 135 AD, just demonstrating God's disapproval of them for a long 1845 years. And to this day, they still don't have a temple. God is keeping them from building a temple because he's no longer accepting any typical sacrifices because the antitypes have come. So this is showing their demise. Sister Debbie.
I'm kind of confused now because I thought the trumpets were from the viewpoint of the nominal systems. Like Israel became a nominal system so that it saw hail and fire mingled with blood, which would be good for Christians, but bad for nominal systems. And the nominal system, or Israel, saw a third of the trees burnt up. Maybe they lost a third of their adherence to Christianity. You know, something like that. I thought it was more from an opposite viewpoint, not from God's viewpoint. Over.
That's why I took us to the fifth trumpet. So in the fifth trumpet was the green grass and the trees, green trees, were they hurt or did they get to, or were they spared?
Well, they were spared.
So over
is that from the nominal system's viewpoint?
So over here, let me leave it at that. I've expressed how it appeals to my mind, and if it appeals differently to others, that's fine. You know, that's not out of harmony. A third part was Christianity, and if you would like to think that the hail and the fire mingled with blood is representing that this is the conversion to Christianity, that's okay. It seems to me the burnt up had the thought of being consumed, but it's okay. Either way you want to look at it, I can see how you can harmonize it. Brother Chris.
Well, we know that Paul just has brought out, just to reflect on the comments I already made, Paul is the messenger. And who was he the messenger to? At first, his message was he was going to the synagogues. He was preaching to the Jews. And because of their rejection of his message, he said, I'm done with you. I mean, we're done with you. And so he turned to the Gentiles. And so that message to the Jews was a hard truth. It was a judgment message. Because as already said, the 70 weeks of Daniel had come to its fulfillment. It was now their time, their visitation. And he's telling them, you missed the boat. But it's not too late for what Jesus has already provided. Not, in my mind, it mingled with blood was, as Brock said, was the Christian message. It was the life poured out for this opportunity of the high calling. And so the third part of trees would burn up, and we know that ultimately in AD 70, that typical justification, the temple destroyed, was manifest. It was demonstrated that God was now rejecting the nation, and there was like no question. They had no place for their sacrifices. They had no place to worship. And so the judgment message was pretty clear. And so Israel was the target religious factor that the Lord was going to deal with first. And he always, even in the gospel age, he always, at the end of the gospel age, he returns and he deals with his servants first. And so I think that's part of what's all been said. Over.
Okay, thank you, Brother Chris, for the comments. All right. Brother David.
Brother Rick, it reminded me of the sower, the parable of the sower, where the tares were burned up, so the message was more or less a targeted message for the time, like you had pointed out, and that there was a group, specific group, to receive it, and there was a group that received it, so to speak, in a bad way, and the same thing will happen to the nominal systems at the end of this age. Over.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. Further comments or questions? Berkus?
I don't have a comment, but a question. Now, we know in the typical 10 plagues poured out on Egypt, we can draw a correlation when we get to the plagues poured out in chapter 16, the last seven plagues. Is there a correlation here with this first one and it being mingled with blood and the blood that was, the waters were turned to blood? Is there a way that fits in here, or is it a little not quite applicable in this picture? It seems to me the Lord would find a way to give us a triple application in a manner. I was just wondering.
Well, I don't have a positive on about the Egyptian plague because there were 10, but with the seven trumpets, it seems like this trumpet message that correlates to the plague, the first of the seven plagues in Revelation 16:1, the correspondence is the first went and poured out his bowl upon the earth, and there came noises and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and such. So the similarity is that where it was poured on the earth, but I can't comment on the Egyptian one per se. Further comments or questions? Ruth.
I'm just trying to digest the blood mingled with blood. Are we saying that the blood is the understanding of the ransom? That was part of the message that Paul was preaching throughout the throughout his ministry? Is that what we're saying?
Well, there are several views being presented, which, as I said, is okay. Some would feel that that's probably true. But the angle I particularly was taking is that it's the blood poured out shows life being taken. And so that the hard truths and the judgment truths that was spreading, it was mingled with blood because it was destroyed. It was taking life from the Jews who wouldn't accept the truth. They were dying to their typical justified relationship. If they had accepted the truth, they would have life. But this is, in my mind, this first trumpet is showing the demise of Judaism because it fits so well with the time period and the typical justification that they lost. But there are several places in these trumpets where it says men die. We talked about that in the fifth trumpet. They were tormented. We talked about it in the sixth trumpet that men, a third part of the men died. They were converted. In our third trumpet, the third trumpet, it tells us that in verse 11, 8, 11, part of the third trumpet, those who followed the star called Wormwood and were part of the waters became as Wormwood, and many men died because of the waters. I think that shows their death is showing they converted to the truth. So they changed from the one condition to another. That's what I think death shows, conversion from one condition to another. But when you're burned up, it means you just lose. So in my mind, if it had said that the green grass died, or a third part of the trees died, in our first trumpet, I could view that as a conversion more easily. But because they're burned up and looking at the time frame of what was actually taking place during that first trumpet, I think it just shows that they lost. It was a loss of Israel and the Jewish people and the loss of Judaism because of the message of truth. They were supplanted by Christianity, emerging Christianity. Okay, that's what I had to say on that. But other comments? Okay, Sister Debbie?
So, in a sense, the nominal Judaism would look at themselves as green grass, that they were the best, that they had life. But when they're burnt up, they in their eyes, they lost life. And that's a good thing in God's eyes because Israel was judged. I'm trying to adjust this to the what looks good in God's eyes looks bad in the nominal system's eyes. So that in a way, what you're bringing out, you know, the trees being leaders, the Jewish leaders maybe, a third of, you know, that three-part world of, you know, Hebrew, Greek, and Latin, that third leadership was lost, and they look at it as being burnt up, but God looks at it as a good thing that he got them out of the way. They were judged so that he could move on with his chosen church at that time. Is that the way we can look at it? Over.
So if you hit speaker view, you'll see this chart a lot easier. But if you got your own chart, then that's okay. Let me hit speaker view myself so that I can see what I'm pointing to. All right. So, okay. Plane P is right here. And this is Israel during the Jewish age. Whoops. They have typical justification. Christ died for them. Whoops, sorry. And then they lost their nation. That's why this is a dark screen. It shows that they lost their temple. They lost being able to live in the land of Israel. They lost. See here at the cross? Notice the line P stops. Line P stops at the cross. The shaded area showed there was a little while longer that Israel existed until it was destroyed. All I'm saying is this first trumpet is showing how those on plane P, Israel, lost it at the cross. So, our time is pretty much up. Third part of the trees was Jewish leaders, nominal Jewish leaders. They were teaching man-made doctrines, Sadducees, Pharisees. And the third part of green grass, the green, those who had typical justification with God through the animal sacrifices until Jesus provided the antitypical sacrifice. Then they lost life from God's point of view. Typical life. And the blood was mingled with the truths that was a spreading, consuming truth about Christianity, and it took the life from Judaism that it had offered through typical animal sacrifices. So they were burnt up. That will never be again. It didn't just die and convert or transfer to a new relationship. It's gone. We'll never have that plain pea ever again. Okay, so we'll leave it there, brother, and our time is spent. We're glad to consider more comments next week. We're certainly not hard and fast on either way you'd like to view it. It's certainly symbolic and has to be interpreted. It's just for each of us to try to figure it out. And as we go through the trumpet and interpret more of the symbols along the way, it might become more convincing to us on different aspects. So true. Okay. So, brethren, we'll close here,